We're ready to go. I'm Nancy Searles, and this is the third out of four sessions, The Nature of Illness, called Letting Go of the Shoulds and Oughts. We have talked about perceptions. We have talked about the inner energy, the energy that is within us, that is in fact us. There are, in addition to the balance, harmony, and rhythm that we bring to ourselves from within ourselves, issues that we work with within ourselves, there are environmental issues. There are things that we bring on ourselves through life that hamper us. This is what we're going to talk about this morning. Now, what I did this morning was revamp the whole thing I was going to present. That's always dangerous. And I wrote it in pencil, which you know how this light is with pencil. So I do have this, and I want to get in a whole lot of material this morning, including working with our child. And I would like to have time for a meditation for those who wish to go into a meditation, meeting your child. And I also want to give you time to talk about the specific issues and a little bit more about what happens through the chakra centers, how they are manifested in illness, and what some of the illnesses are with respect to energy. So I do want to remain somewhat organized and go through this material fairly quickly. We should create our own reality. How many times a day do you use the word should not? This will come up later. We come through this life in conformity. As a baby and as a young child, we are taught right and wrong. The do's and the don'ts. Don't cross the street. Don't hit your sister. Don't eat the dirt. Don't do this. Don't do that. There are very few do's. There are very few permissions given to a child. Have you ever thought about that? It's your room is a mess. You didn't do this. You didn't do that. It's never how neat your room is. You know, you did a good job. Or you picked up your boots this morning. First time in 4 years, but you know. We would add if we did that. But we're very negative oriented to a child in order to get that child to do the right thing. When the child becomes a teenager, what disastrous thing happens to that child? They may rebel, and where does their self-esteem come from? But other kids, doesn't it?
Peers.
The peers. You've got to wear, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, I've got to wear those jeans. Everybody else is. I have to behave this way. I have to behave that way. Very peer conscious. I'll talk about this later as a very positive time. Then we come into the college years where there is, again, pressure. I've got to prepare myself for a job. I have to. I have to go to this college. Everybody else did. My family. I have to do this. I have to follow this path. And again, we conform, we conform, we conform. As an adult, where we live, how we dress, the job we have, what we do with our lives, conform. It was only 7 years ago that as I was on an emergency room table deciding whether to hang on to stuff or not with this asthma attack, that I began to break with conformity. The conformity had gotten so bad, and I didn't meet it. I have been unhappy with it since the time I was 3. The child got shut off at the age of 3. And I followed shoulds and oughts, and maybe some of you can relate to this. I followed everybody else's directive of me. I went to the right schools, I met the right people, I married the right person, I got the right education, I went to the right church, I went to the right parties, I did the right stuff, and I was a mess. When we moved from Buffalo, New York to Valparaiso, my ex-husband was transferred. I was running a volunteer bureau. I had 3 preschoolers, a volunteer bureau I had started, and was supposed to be president of this very large organization. All prestigious things that would make my ex-husband look good. And that's the way it was run. Well, thank heavens we moved. But I arrived in Valparaiso with a tick in the side of my face. And if anybody looked at me quickly, I actually got shaking. I could not pick up a glass with one hand. I was actually allergic to people, if you will. I reacted to anybody confronting me. It was so alien to who I was, all these shoulds and oughts. And it was my middle daughter at the age of 14 who said, "Mom, you're not happy." If I ever expected her to marry and know that she could change and grow, I had better deal with my own life. And at that point, I went to a counselor to find out what was wrong with me. John said, "Go get it fixed. Go get it fixed. You know, come back in line. Go get it fixed." Whatever it was. And I went to the counselor to find out that the marriage was in trouble. I was fine. And after the second session, she said, "I want to tell you something. We would like to hire you." She said, "I know you can't do that, but I want to tell you this so that you know you're okay. Your whole life has been run by 2 words, should and ought. What are you going to do about it?" And then I began to take responsibility, and that's what we're talking about today. So taking responsibility. What happens when we go through this childhood and teenage and young adult and adulthood? Hopefully you did not adhere to the shoulds and oughts as much as I did. Maybe you have. And no matter at what point in life you discover that, you can change. This is a dysfunctional family situation. I allowed myself to grow up in dysfunction. Dysfunction occurs when other people are shooting on you and you're taking it. And you are taking it. We learn at a very early age to give away our power, to let other people rule us. You should go to this school. Okay. You have to marry this kind of person. Okay. You have to have this kind of job based on your experience. Okay. We give our power away every time we say should. We're going to talk about some of these. This is why I made notes, so that I wouldn't forget some of these that I want to talk about. We become people pleasers. I was a prime example. I pleased everybody but me. And that's why, in the long run, I collapsed. The me was beginning to scream. You know, make a choice. Either check out totally or pay attention. I was no longer allowing myself to be guided by anybody else. And when we live by shoulds and oughts, there is constant guilt. We've allowed ourselves to become victims, And there is guilt that if we take a little of this responsibility, we'll be rejected. I don't want to go to that school. I don't care how many generations have gone to that school. I don't want to go. Then comes the responsibility of what do you want? The minute you say, I don't want to go to that party. I don't want to do that. What are they going to think? Am I going to be rejected? No. Well, maybe just this once I'll go to that party when I don't want to. Because it's a lot easier to just go than it is to face the rejection. Or somebody asks you to go someplace and you say, no, I can't right now. You say, gee, I really probably could have, and maybe that means that that person has to stay home, so I've made her day miserable. That's her show. You know, you said no, own it, that's okay. It needs to become okay. And this guilt that we've let somebody down, we need to give ourselves permission to let other people do their own thing. We do not have to take responsibility for everybody around us. And when we state where we are, it is a very healthy thing. But guilt and victim and rejection are a very large part of this whole dysfunctional system and all of the shoulds and the oughts that guide us and keep us from knowing the balance, the harmony, and the rhythm that we've been talking about. And this is why this chakra system gets all out of whack, and why the control, we end up trying to hold on to control. And I was trying to keep myself, I was trying to keep me in balance while I did all of these things that I knew were not my preference. I enjoyed starting the volunteer bureau, but I really didn't want to run it because I wanted to be home with my kids. Well, I should do this. I want to do this. And finally, my three-year-old tugged it on my skirt one day and said, Mommy, don't go to work. And that was my last day. But it took that. I mean, my kids are the ones who have awakened me all the way along the way. And when I was divorced, my son said, you know, raising kids may be one thing, but boy, raising parents is a lot harder. And I think that's probably right. Okay, there are three kinds of shoulds and oughts that I'm going to talk about. There are many forms of should and ought. And I've put a list up here on the board. I must, I have to, I've got to, I should, I ought, I can't. That's a good, healthy list. Last you a good lifetime to go through those. You may have, and we'll go through these in detail, but a physical day-to-day, the shoulds and oughts that address the everyday stuff. And then the ego versus the inner self shoulds and oughts, and the environmental, the cultural parent. And okay, the first one, which is the everyday stuff, I should go to the store. I should go to the store. When you ask yourself, when you say should, ask yourself why. Well, I have to buy a bedspread. Why? Because the one I have is worn out. Okay. You need a new bedspread. That's a given on the day-to-day. And I have to go do it, but I'm tired. I don't want to go do it, but I have to. And so most of us would say, all right, I have to go and buy this bedspread. I'll go. With this weight of have to. You know, that bedspread is telling you that it has to be bought. It is ruling your life. A bedspread, for Pete's sake, you know, has control over you. Can you think of some other choices? Right, you say you're tired. okay? You need to deal with this issue. How are you going to deal with it? What are some of the choices that might occur instead of I have to go right now and buy it?
Mm-hmm. You can procrastinate.
Oh, you can procrastinate, but that's a wonderful thing, yeah. You can put it off until you should on yourself the next day about the bedspread. Yes, well, that is a choice. What else might you do?
Ask somebody else to do it.
Okay, very good. You might, okay, my daughter is going out this afternoon, going past that store. I'll ask her to pick up the blue bedspread. Okay, what else might you do?
Take a nap first and then go.
Take a nap first? Okay, that's right. That's right. Okay, I'm tired. That's a fact. Okay, either I'll go buy the bedspread and then take a nap, or I'll take a nap and then go buy the bedspread. The point is, you're owning it. You're leaving the have to behind and saying, okay, I will go buy a bedspread. I will take a nap. You have set your own boundaries. The bedspread no longer owns you. Or maybe you wait until tomorrow. Well, I'm going out anyway tomorrow. I can get it then. Here you have given yourself choices, and you have put yourself in control. It's a very subtle difference, isn't it? But when you count the number of times that we should on ourselves, day after day, letting a bedspread own you, letting the grocery store own you, letting your kids and all of their stuff own you, letting friends own you, letting your job own you, not much left, is there? So we begin with the small stuff. Okay, the second one, dealing with ego and inner self. Oh, I should go to that lecture this morning. You're sitting out on the patio having coffee. I should go. Should, okay, it's a should. I ask myself why. Because I'll probably learn something. But I'd really rather sit here and drink coffee. Okay, now there are some issues that go on within yourself. And your inner self has a direction. Wants to go to the lecture because you'll learn something. But you're tired and you've had your mind filled with a whole lot of stuff and you'd like to sit and enjoy your coffee. That's not a right or a wrong, it's an is. Okay, what are some of the choices there?
Sit with the coffee. Sit there with the coffee.
Sit there with the coffee, but you still want to hear the lecture. What
would
you
do? Buy the tape.
Buy the tape, okay. You may say, yeah, it's important right now that I sit here and enjoy the cup of coffee and the people I'm talking to. I'll buy the tape. Or you might bring the coffee with you.
Plan your time so that you have time for the cup of coffee and then go.
Plan your time so you have time for the cup of coffee and time for the lecture. The point is you deal with it. The lecture doesn't own you. Or your feelings of guilt because you didn't go. I should have gone to that lecture. I know I should have gone to that lecture. Does not help you at all. All it does is bring the self-worth down a little bit farther. There's something else out there that you didn't do. Another should.
But in the process of all this thing, as you're thinking about it, maybe the shoulds are turned to want to.
That's wonderful, yes. Now that's the wonderful point of affirmation. Sometimes those shoulds, and how neat that is, that you get excited about going to the lecture, or you get excited about going and choosing that bedspread. Hey, that's kind of neat. But yes, the should can turn around when you realize what it is that you are shoulding on yourself about. Maybe you're being lazy. And that usually is our cop-out. And so we have to be a little bit stern with the inner self and say, okay, come on. You can have a cup of coffee later. Let's get going.
I think a should that all of us probably have when we're on a trip is, I should write a postcard to this person.
Oh, aren't those wonderful? I have one more of those that I should do, right. And those I would put under either inner commitments or commitments, which is the third kind, with the environment. And these, I think, are the most insidious kinds of shoulds and oughts. The cultural parent. And the cultural parent tells you you should write your mother every day, you should write to your kids, you should send a postcard. This is to my mother and father-in-law X, but they still are my mom
cards.
And dad, and so I should send them
a card. Birthday cards, there's anniversary.
Yes, and those need to become want-tos, or the card doesn't come across. The should is that it's a pain to go buy it. Then you've got to find the time and write it. Then you have to remember to put a stamp on it and address it and get it to the post office. And these most often are writing a letter or paying the bills. When you can get over the hump of saying, okay, I should do that, and say, okay, I know I don't want to do it, but I am going to do it. I'm going to own that this, I'll feel better when it's done. I am going to write the postcards now and get it out of the way. When I do that with paying the bills, which I could put off successfully for, you know, a very long time if I wish to, when I get over that hump and say, okay, in the next hour I am going to pay the bills, I have a change of feeling in me. It doesn't own me. I feel anxious to get on with it. Have you ever had that feeling?
Yeah.
You turn something around and then you feel, well, let's go. What are we waiting for? Let's get it done. You have set the boundaries. Granted, it's something as simple as a postcard, but it's those simple things that add up. Yes?
Don't you think sometimes we know people who make lists and actually get it done that way?
Sure.
Dilly-dally, you sit and you battle it one way or another, and when you just straighten up, start walking and get it done. Don't you think that works better?
It does if you take ownership of either making a list or at least saying, okay, come on, let's go, let's get it done. Each person needs to own that. That's nothing, that can become a should for something else, for somebody else. Or I see somebody who does this and then I say, I should be like that. I'm right in the same trap. I need to turn it around and own it myself. But yes, some people do make lists. Yes, you had a question?
It gets more complicated when your spouse or close friend is involved in these decisions.
Yes, it is more difficult when your spouse or someone close to you is involved in a decision. Then you have two partners working on this. Yes, it is. And it behooves us even more in that case to be honest and not should on one another. But this takes teamwork between the people involved, not to should on each other. And this is something that is processed, but also when there are two of you, you can correct one, you know, you can catch the shoulds in one another. And you can build a process that is from the, what I will call negative to the self, to something that is positive, together. But yes, that is difficult. Bill, you
know? As a male, I have to suggest a thought. And it is that, in a male point of view, if we were all this way, living in our Western world, how can we get along?
As a male living, I'm repeating the questions for the tape, if you, and also all of us, but if, as a male in this Western culture, if we were all this way.
No, as a male, I have to bring this up.
Okay, as a male, I what? I
because a man's
have to.
Is
right, as a male, I have to?
Yeah. Well, I'm feeling this way now, but I shouldn't.
That I should. That I should? What do you want to say?
No, I'm thinking about the running of our very materialistic or world that we live in, our Western world, in contrast to the...
It's run by shoulds and oughts.
Yeah. And if everybody did this to the limit, can we exist?
That's a good
question.
See,
we're talking individually.
Yes, we
are. And that's fine. That's fine individually. But collectively, can we all do that?
End up with chaos.
All right,
That's why I said a male's point of view, because I think I'm a male person, and I'm not downgrading a female, but I think so many of us will think that a male will immediately or sooner think of those things than him, because they say a woman thinks by the heart and a man by the head.
A man?
Not necessarily.
Well,
no.
Okay, not necessarily, but there is an issue that I have come to honor, that the man has the facility for much logic and the running of things. Now, a man also, and this is a whole other lecture, but a man has the female animal within him. The female, who is the caring and the nurturing and has the children, is by virtue of the femaleness, a female, also has the male animus within her. So it is twofold. But because, and I've often said, until men can have children, and I mean this very seriously, there will be a difference, and it is a difference to be honored, I feel. Now, that is not women submit to your husbands in the forum that we had last week. This is not getting into an issue of submission or anything else, but there are balances. And while the logic and the nurturing work within each person, the nurturing and the logic also work in partnership. So I think it works both ways. But what you're saying is that this logical, the governmental, when we move away from the individual and come to a large community issue or a nationwide issue of getting things done and of running and of planning and executing things, what happens if everybody is living without the shoulds and the oughts? What would happen if governments existed by virtue of making statements of wanting to or not, I cannot do it, I can't, somebody else is telling me, but I will, or I will not. As a government, not we should or shouldn't, but we will or we will not. Would it not also create the same boundaries of ownership? A government is only an individual grown larger, I feel. A government or a town has a personality. And a government can also be run by everybody else. Ours certainly is. It's run by the shoulds and oughts. It's obviously far more complex to back that down. It's nice to think what would happen if it would take everybody not shoulding on himself or herself individually, and then having that, it begins with the small part and grows to the larger. But that is an excellent question.
I didn't mean to delay the
No, that's an excellent it's an excellent point, and it's something to think about. Yes.
I think paying taxes becomes much easier when you think, well, how fortunate I am that I've made enough money so that I can pay my taxes.
If you can view taxes that way, that's right. If you can feel I've earned enough money that I can give instead of I have to, I find that's one should that I have trouble coming out under. But yes.
I think what he was saying too, I think it's different being a man than a lady. A lady's got the children continually under her feet, and we try and do so much volunteer work and the work of our house. And a man, there are men that do procrastinate, but most of them do not. But they've got their job, and I think they put first things first. For we get so many things that have to be first in a
Well, and there we go, again, using have to. It is true that again, the difference in the men's and the women's roles. We may come to a little more discussion of this as I go on with this list. As we come to the environmental or the cultural parent, and you may say, I have to go to the office. Now this is a commitment, cultural parent. I have to go to work today. Why? Well, I made a commitment. It's my job. I have to go. Okay. Does the job own you?
Sometimes.
Okay, this is a very unfortunate situation, but sometimes we will answer yes to that. The job owns us. No, the job does not own us. In attitude, I have to go to work today. I made a commitment. Okay, I made a commitment. I am going to work. I may say, I'm tired and I really don't want to, but I am going. Because I made a commitment. There's no change in feeling. There's no change. You have made a commitment. You're going to go by saying, I have to go. The job is dragging me in again. What's your attitude going to be when you get there? Not so hot is right. Or, okay, yeah, but it is Thursday. I've only got 2 more days of this week, and then I can relax. I am going to work today.
And payday is coming.
Okay. But what that little change from I have to go to I am going, what's going to happen to your attitude when you get there? It's going to be better. The power of positive thinking obviously plays a huge role in all of this. But it boils down to the shoulds and oughts. Yes.
Well, I was saying, if you don't go to work, I would think of the consequences if the place of work, if you don't go, if you think of somebody else that's going to have to fill in that spot, like nursing, if you don't show up and there's nobody on that shift, you'd feel guilty.
Okay, then you're going back to guilt. You're letting the other people who will have to do your job run your life.
But that's part of commitment.
Okay, part of commitment is commitment. Is commitment
to the job.
All right, commitment, that's fine, but saying as a nurse or as a therapist, I will go to work today. But to say, if I didn't go to work today, somebody will have to fill my place, I have to go, I'm right back in the same trap of I have to go, and here is this weight on my head by saying, I own my commitment. I own it. Yes, I know somebody would have to take my place, and I know that I have made a commitment in writing on a contract to go to my job. I own the commitment. I will go to work today. It's very simple. There's no guilt in that. Or, I'm running a low-grade temp. I will not go to work today. Now, you know that somebody has to take your place and so forth, but you also know if you go in sick, you're going to make other people sick. So I'm saying, I'm sorry, I can't come to work today. I know that you're going to have to take my own. I feel so guilty. You're going to have a rotten day. But saying, okay, I will not go to work today. I am not feeling well. Not I cannot. I can't. I tell patients there is no such word as can't. You either will not, or you are unable, and then we do something else. But there is no such word as can't. I will not be at work today because I am running a low-grade fever. I will see you tomorrow. This will be met with, okay, this is the situation. Sally, will you take her place here, and we'll have to do this, and we'll have to do that, and the job gets done.
But she's always sick.
If she's always sick, then there is something that needs to be done.
I mean, that's that other person's reply that she has to take her place.
Okay, but this person doesn't hear that. Now, if that is an issue, then it is up to the other person. If she says, well, Sally, this woman's always sick, then it is up to the institution to deal with that and not say, well, we'll give her one more chance. We should give her one more chance. You either deal with it or you don't. But you don't go around behind this woman's back and say, oh, she's here for I wonder how long, half a day, whatnot. You bring down the morale around you. But it's owning what you are going to do or what you're not going to do, and not letting somebody else take control of it.
Can you be a people pleaser and own it?
I have a granddaughter
that has always been a people pleaser. She's picked on a boy to date that is a people pleaser, and they get everything they want. They manipulate with this people pleasing thing.
Okay, people pleasing and caregiver are two different terms. A people pleaser can use other people.
Manipulate.
And a people pleaser is someone who is, in fact, avoiding issues of the self. My ex-husband was a people pleaser, an engineer who did everything according to what had been handed down to him by his parents, and a wonderful man. And he didn't realize he was manipulating. But according to all these shoulds and oughts, he would please people, and then he would bring stuff back that fit with where he was. A caregiver, on the other hand, is one who often ends up being a people pleaser and needs to be very careful with the boundaries. This is what I'm working with now as a caregiver. I had been taken by everybody. You know, everybody who needed help, I would give myself away to. And learning to establish the boundaries as a caregiver. And obviously a caregiver is a people pleaser, but not in the same way. So here are two different terms. And
I sort of think this applies to our government too.
Oh yes, it does too. And this is part of the, sure, if I give you this, you know, and you don't even say this, you just, now something will go out and then you'll get something back. I should get this in return. If I give you this, I have to have this. There are the shoulds and the have-tos again. And a person doing the same thing. You will hear a lot of shoulds. You should do this for me.
Remember when I asked my question, I mentioned the Western world.
Yes.
And now let's take the third world countries, I mean, some of these things would be a lot easier to deal with, such as in the Philippines, where we Filipino time is any time, and
mm-hmm.
Mexico and Central America and that. So a time element can enter in too.
A time element can, and you hinted at something else when working with third world countries or on the individual level, anybody else, is seeing situations from the other point of view, from the other person or the other country's point of view and within their time frame, and not saying you should do it according to my hoil or according to where I am. I expect you to be on my time frame. And we usually go, yes, sir. How quickly? You know, how high do I jump? And somebody will take control, which our country has.
A good book is Arius, One Must Drink from One's Own Well.
One must drink from one's own well. To thine own self be true. Pick up your own cross and carry it. All of these are what we're talking about. Setting your own boundaries, absolutely. the other part, we have commitment, and then there is that innocuous statement, because this is the way it's done. This is the way it's always been done, and this is the way it always will be done. Not thy will, but mine. And this is, I have to, well, with the child going to college, say, or doing something that all of his family has done, that child should only go to that place, should only go to that place if he wants to. But the minute he says, I should go, he can go only if that is what he wants, if those are his boundaries. In the case of the teenager, I want to make a point here about conformity. The teenager, oh, and I can remember this particularly with my youngest daughter, who would have 7 pairs of pants on the floor in the morning, you know, calling her friends, and what are you wearing, and this isn't right. And, oh, it would take an act of Congress to get her out of the house. But she'd go out in the right jeans. The right jeans. I have to wear this pair of jeans. Conformity for the teenager, which is a very tumultuous time, conformity is very important. It gives that age child a safe base from which to explore. So this child needs that conformity and then can explore when that young person feels okay because he or she is like everybody else on the outside. Then the inside can reach out a little bit. So conformity, I do want to make the point, is very important at certain times of change, which is what the teenager is going through. And when you are going through changes, you're moving, your job has changed, or what have you, this conformity may provide you the safety net or some security from which you can work. Now, it doesn't mean using the word should necessarily. Prudence, at the age of 14, finally looked at me with her hands on her hips and said, I am wearing these jeans. And she was very surprised when I said, go for it. She made a statement, set her boundaries. They had holes in the knees. No respectable mother would ever, of course, want her daughter to go out like that. But she made a statement, set her boundaries. It wasn't I have to, it wasn't the kids are pulling me, but Mom, I know you don't like it, but this is what I am wearing today. And I respected that. That was fine, out of her conformity. And then, we've talked a little bit about this, I have to go to that party. I am dead beat, but I've got to go. How many of us have said, I've got to go to that meeting? I've got to go. What are we afraid of? Rejection. We are afraid we're going to be rejected. We feel guilty. And that is fear. Guilt is fear. Fear of what? Fear of being rejected. If I don't go, they won't miss me. That's the greatest fear. If I don't go into work as a nurse, they'll get along very well without me. Set your own boundaries. I am not going to the party because I'm tired, so maybe what? I call a friend and say, I'm not going to be there, but say hi to everybody for me. See you tomorrow. And you find that you're not rejected. You bring rejection on yourself. Nobody does it to you. Nobody else does it to you. Well, how do we deal with this? How do we unshould? We're going to talk a little bit and then do a meditation. How many times a day do you should on yourself? It's always kind of neat to keep count. You will be amazed how many times you use one of these words up here. I ought to, I should, I must, I have to, I've got to, or I can't. One suggestion in the book is to wear a rubber band on your wrist, and every time you say should, snap it. I would suggest further, jot down what you're shoulding and oughting, if you're really going at this. And as you catch yourself saying, I should do this, stop yourself. It's hard to hear it. I hear it on tapes when I do, you know, this kind of thing. I'm wondering how many I'll hear here. We all do it. And as much as we concentrate on it, you know, and try to work through and setting boundaries, it's a process. It doesn't happen overnight. It's a process I've been involved in now consciously for about a year. As I allow gifts to be manifest, it's letting go. And I want to talk about the words letting go, because I think of them one way and yet they come across another way. Letting go of a whole lot of stuff. But keep track of how many times you should not. And when you should, ask why. I should go to that lecture. And you may think it, gee, I really ought to go to that lecture. Why? And go through the process. And allow yourselves alternatives. And then see what happens. Okay, I'll take my coffee with me and I'll go to the lecture. I want to go. And it'll be okay. But it's a conscious effort to work with it. Notice the people around you, pulled and pushed by shoulds and oughts. I've got to do this. I have to do this. My mother told me I could do that. I've got to, you know, all of this stuff. And I found in working with some people that there are very few statements that the person claims. Very few actions that the person claims for him or herself. It's always somebody else's fault. And you're giving away your power. You are giving yourself to other people. So it is important, and I've talked about boundaries. Now, one thing, the statement I'm going to make here needs a little explanation. No one can force you to do anything. And yet I think about your walk. And when you are forced by an enemy to do something. Rape is also a very good example. When the physical person is forced into a situation over which he literally has no physical control, and of course this happens to us from time to time, hopefully not as radically, but there are times. If you are a person who has been setting boundaries for himself and been owning your feelings, owning who you are, owning what you do, when you get into a desperate situation like that, you have a great deal more with which to work because you have your boundaries. And through these boundaries that you have, you can ask for the Lord's help through the boundaries that are there. If there are shoulds and oughts, then you just give yourself away to the person who has taken control now over your physical body.
One's mind.
One, yeah.
One's mind is always free.
One's mind is always free.
But you allow it to be.
If you allow it to be, and this is the boundary that I'm talking about. The prisoners of war who are put through all sorts of hell, if they can hang on to their boundaries and not give their mind away, but retain it within boundaries, which have been practiced, they come out a lot better than the person who is just swept away, as they have been all their lives, by everybody else's should and ought. Be aware, often when we deal with shoulds and oughts, we go to a counselor, and I hear people saying, well, my counselor said I should. What have you done? You've given yourself away to the counselor. Or, and this was the point I was trying to make last night, let go and let God. What are you doing? He did it. I don't have boundaries. He did it. I'll just give it all to God. It's a cop out. I have no responsibility at all now. I don't have to do a thing. I don't have to do a thing. There it is again, in the ultimate giving away. Claim our boundaries. We speak to God, receive God, within the boundaries that are, in fact, us. Each of us is a unique, beautiful, and whole person. Not run by everybody else. But this, particularly in this culture, this is very prevalent. The term letting go, and this is the last thing, and then I do want to go into this meditation. Letting go is also a giving away. And I titled this talk, and I used the term, and realized that letting go for many is saying, well, that person died, and I have grieved now for 6 months, and now it's gone. I'm letting go of it. It's gone. I'm not going to be sad anymore. What you've done is stuff it into the third chakra, right here. You've stuffed it. You don't let go. You own your feelings. The grieving goes on, and you bring all of this stuff that you shoved down into the third chakra up to the heart chakra, and you feel it, and you cry, and you get angry, and you feel abandoned, and you feel rejected, and you allow, you give permission to those feelings to come up and then be part of you, and as they become part of you, you can go on. So when I talk about letting go, I'm talking about that. I'm not talking about, well, okay, it's Tuesday, I'm done with this now. This happens so often in relationships. Get on with life. I've got to get on with life. I've got to get on with life. True, Tuesday generally does follow Monday, whether you ordain it so or not. But you can feel the pain that is with you and own it. So this is by way of entry at this point. Okay, we talk about shoulds and oughts. Where within us can we go that is free of shoulds and oughts? It is our child. Our child that is within us. The child is the essence of the self, which existed before all of this conformity took place. It is the essence of the self, which is free, in fact, of the ego. It is free, it is pure, it is innocent, as we were when we were children, probably before the age of 3. And I'm seeing the time now as 11:45. What I would like to do, with your permission, is begin tomorrow's session with the meditation to visit the child, and then we'll go on. That is by way of affirmation, actually, so it would fit with tomorrow's affirmation of self. So if this is all right, I will ask for questions. Tomorrow's session will be shorter. I'd already planned it to be shorter. And at that time, I do want to entertain your questions going back to yesterday's lecture about the illnesses and the chakras. I do not wish to ignore that. And I also feel that the meditation is very important. So if that's okay, we'll handle that tomorrow, since this we had some good questions today, and that's very important to include. I would entertain at this time any other questions about any of this material today. Yes?
I would like to ask how we perceive of the words from Jesus, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross.
All right, if anyone would come, would follow me, that he gives up his cross.
Let him deny himself and take up his cross.
All right, denying himself to me refers to the ego. Let him deny all of the stuff with which we involve ourselves on the conscious level. Let him take up his spiritual cross. The cross which allows him to walk in the light fully, in freedom, and thereby able to accept his love. We cannot walk in the light of Christ if we are in control, if the ego is in control, if the doing person, the conscious, active person is in control. So for me, that is what that means, to deny, and it's all of this that we're talking about. All of this stuff that is cultural and is around us and with which we are brought up. It is the being, taking up our cross, the being, letting God happen instead of the doing and making things happen. Yes?
That's like putting God first above people and everything.
It is putting God first. It is also putting the inner spiritual self, listening to the inner spiritual self, which is within the light of Christ. And so putting God, I still have trouble. I was talking this morning with Buzz. I have talked about not personifying God, and yet God is very personal to me, extremely personal, as I walk in the light of Christ. But so when we talk about putting God, you're putting something. I would rather hear it living within truth and eternal love as we walk in the light. We tend to place visually, something over here. And okay, I'm going to put God here, and I'm going to stand here. This is a little bit hard for me. Yes, Bill.
Catherine, in her book, Polistina, says we have to go through a kenosis, it's a Russian term, for a flushing out of ourselves before we can bring in. Yeah. And we have to, at our own schedule, periodically throughout the year, have these Polistinas with the kenosis.
Yes, and what you're talking about. Yes, it is not a full vessel that can be filled. It is an empty vessel. And this is what you're talking about. Empty of what?
Self.
Empty of the self, empty of the ego.
Guerra has talked about that in liberation theology.
Yes, yes.
But I hear the word have to.
Yeah, yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
And what is the source? What is the source of power that enables me, as another lady said a while ago, to honestly be able to respond, you know, be able to respond with the want to?
Yeah, okay. That's
what is that?
What is that power that allows us?
Let's say God wants us to.
To respond. Yes. It can't.
Well, no, that can be either a power of authority or is that. Is
okay.
He able to change me in such a way that I. It's my desire.
Yes. And
that's
what
we're.
That's
getting
what we're
at.
Talking
It's my desire.
It is my desire.
Yeah.
That is. That's an excellent point. Whether it's authority at work. We have a hard time with authority.
Yes, we do.
We have to obey authority is what, and that's what we're told in the Bible. You know, that the Israelites had to obey or they'd be punished, you know, with the finger pointed at them. And what is the power that brings us from obeying the authority to wanting to be within that authority? Or that power? I am going to leave you with that question. Think about it. What is that power? Let's answer that tomorrow. Let's work with that and answer it tomorrow. Think about it, and this is a very good discussion of affirmation that will come out of this.